Taking up where his previous novel Brooklyn finished, Cullum Tobin's latest novel, Nora Webster, draws on many experiences in the writer's own life. Ava Walsh has been reading it for us and she joins me now in studio. So Ava, first of all, where does this novel begin then, and what is the relationship to the previous novel Brooklyn?
It's like sort of picking up partly where it ended, because it opens in the 60s and the central character, Nora Webster, has an encounter with the mother of the central character of the previous novel, Brooklyn, Eilish Lacey. Her mother, Mrs. Lacey, comes to see Nora Webster as a visit of condolence, because Nora has just been widowed. She's lost her husband after a short illness. She's lost him at an early point in his in their lives, in their marriage. And I suppose it continues the story. We're now into the 60s and we're meeting a familiar world. It's the world of Enniscorthy. It's the small town. And it's that whole environment that we saw in Brooklyn.
So we meet Nora. She's now a widow and she's got four children.
Four children.
Maybe you tell us a little more about the children that we meet in the book.
Yeah, because they're obviously it's crucial, the relationship too. She has two daughters, Fiona and Áine, who are older. Fiona is studying to be a teacher. Áine is in boarding school. And the two boys are younger and are at home with their mother, Donal and Connor. And they're quite young. I mean, in the sense that they're still, I mean, something like 8 and 10. They're young boys. And I suppose much of the action of the novel is the interconnection between Nora and mainly her two sons, but also her daughters as well.
Now, there's been some discussion about how autobiographical or not the book is. I've heard Cullum Tobin himself talking about it. For you as a reader, though, did you feel it did parallel life, real life for him? Can you explain how you felt as a reader tackling the story?
I think it draws on his own life. I mean, his mother was widowed at a similar age. He came in a similar way within his own family. He and his brother were younger, the youngest in the family. The town is the same. The father was also a teacher. So he's drawing a lot of his own life. He wrote a very interesting memoir called A Guest at the Feast, which you can only read on Kindle. And I reread it after I read this again. And many of the scenes from his own life, his mother confronting the teacher that puts one of his brothers into a B class other than an A class, these are transposed into the novel. But they are transposed. It's remaking it. I suppose it reminded me, say, the way John McGahern used to use his Leitrim childhood, or Kate O'Brien used Limerick, or, you know, Joyce used Dublin. The writer's using the basis of his own life, but he's turning it into, I suppose, it's not autobiography, it's not memoir.
So is it written from the perspective of this young boy looking at his mother, or is Nora Webster the fully realised character at the centre of this?
She's the centre, and that's what's, I think, very striking about it, because he's been over this territory before. In the Blackwater Lightship, we had Lily, who was also widowed early, who had a very difficult time in mourning for her husband. And that period of mourning created a gap between her and her children, Declan and Helen. In this novel, it's all seen through Nora's eyes. But because, well, certainly for me, because I'd read the earlier novels, you're realising that things are happening for the children, for both her sons and her daughters, that she doesn't seem to understand. But it's actually completely focalised through the mother, the figure of the mother. I think it's no accident, but his last collection of essays was called New Ways of Killing Your Mother. But actually, and then of course the Testament of Mary was about the mother, you know. I think it's really attempting to see everything through her eyes. So we see the effect on her, of her mourning. Actually, I thought to me it was a novel about grief.
So tell us then more about the woman that comes across then. I mean, for example, she returns to work. She has to deal with very practical consequences after the death of her husband.
She's a very interesting figure. She's very practical in that sense. She has to continue. She doesn't have that much money, and that's stressed. And Charlie Hoy comes across as a hero in the piece because he increases her pensions and that she gets backdated. And she hears a lot of her husband's family are very strongly Fianna Fáil, and he's seen as a new generation. They sort of distrust him. She speaks up for him, but she has to go back to work. She sells the family kind of summer house in Cush, and her children are really upset at this, but it's not really talked about. But she doesn't have much financial choice. She goes back to work in the office of the factory where she'd worked before she married. She doesn't want to go back. She had kind of played a sort of a trick on a woman who's now her manager, and that woman, of course, humiliates her as much as she can. So she has to do difficult things. She lives in a small town. At one point, she talks about trying to get through the town by the quietest street so she wouldn't be seen when she gets her hair coloured. because everyone will see it, everyone will look at her. But she isn't, I think she was a very, to me, she was a very strong character in the sense that she's quite detached. I mean, she's quite clear. She didn't like her mother. Her mother didn't like her. She's quite an antagonistic relationship with her sisters, a better relationship with her in-laws, in fact, who are very close to her. And all the time she and her children are all watching each other, trying to decipher each other. And she's crucial to them, and they're crucial to her, of course.
Now here in 2014, we've uncovered a lot about the hardships suffered by women in 20th century Ireland, whether Magdalen laundries or abuses of power. Do we get any sense of that darker side of society for women through this book?
In a different way, we do, I think. I mean, we see the economic side. At one point, they decide in where she works that they all will join a union. I mean, and this causes some difficulty for her. She and her friend go and they take part in a pub quiz and they're nearly lynched because of sort of changing marks and things. And there's moments where we are conscious of her as a woman alone. Like she's on the train and a man comes up and talks to her and says, you know, it'll be very hard on your sons now that they've lost their father. And she says, well, that's not much help saying things like that to them. And he's a bit offended, but she has to defend herself. And she is a kind of singular figure. What I think is interesting is the way she turns particularly to music as her own, a kind of a focus of her own identity. To some degree, the external world, the difficulties of the external world are acknowledged in the book. But as the book goes on, she starts taking music lessons. She starts going to a music club where you listen, you know, to records and gramophones and things like that. And she builds this private space where she listens to her own music. And I think I grew up in a small town, or, well, it's a city, but where, I mean, there were people who lived these really precious intellectual lives. And she's one of these people.
Finally, are you recommending it, Aver?
I wonder, will this be the one that makes it to the Booker? I just wonder. I know you were saying it was nominated today for the Book Awards. I think it could do very well.
I've been talking to Aver Walsh about Colm Tobin's latest novel, Nora Webster, which is published by Viking.